It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and this is Maine Things Considered. This evening, more and more ballot questions are in the pipeline for 2016, including not one but two casino efforts for Southern Maine. And a new film premieres in Portland, remembering the Works Progress Administration. First, the news. This is Maine Things Considered on MPB and Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. Less than 2 months after Senator Angus King and Governor Paula Page held separate drug summits on Maine's opiate problem, a broad new multidimensional approach is underway to address the public health crisis. It's called the Maine Opiate Collaborative. The focus is on law enforcement, prevention, and treatment. And as Susan Sharon reports, those leading the effort say they expect measurable outcomes.
Attorney General Janet Mills says she doesn't want another report dropped in the circular bin in the spring or summer of next year. She and others involved in the Maine Opiate Collaborative want action and results, including a drastic reduction in the number of drug traffickers in the state and a drastic reduction in heroin and drug overdose deaths. There were 208 last year.
I want to see a drastic increase in the prevention efforts in our schools. I want to see an increase in the public education efforts. I want to see families come forward and tell us very bluntly how their family members got addicted and how we can prevent this happening to other people.
Three independent working groups have been established to identify the issues that are fueling the opiate crisis and to come up with solutions. They could include everything from expanding drug courts and coordinating resources to proposing legislation at the state and federal levels. Gordon Smith, executive vice president of the Maine Medical Association, says a crucial underpinning of the effort is the recognition that substance abuse disorder, commonly known as addiction, is a chronic illness. That means patients will relapse and live with this illness the rest of their lives. But Smith says they shouldn't be discriminated against or stigmatized as a result.
We spend millions of dollars in this state to fix people's hearts. We might put a stent in an artery because a person has overeaten for 60 years. If that person then goes right back after their surgery to McDonald's, we don't have a guard out in front of McDonald's saying, "Oh no, Jack, you don't get a second chance. We're not going to do your next stent." And we shouldn't do that to people with substance use disorder.
Smith says there's no question that Maine needs more drug treatment. And he acknowledges there aren't a lot of resources. Methadone and Suboxone are the most effective treatments, Smith says, but there aren't enough Suboxone providers in Maine. Still, he says a comprehensive review of what Maine has and what works for people is needed. Public Safety Commissioner John Morris shares that view.
Despite the claims that police or law enforcement is only interested in arresting, we understand that there are three issues.
Those issues, says Morris, are law enforcement, education, and treatment. He says the goal for law enforcement is to go after drug dealers aggressively, but not to fill the county jails with drug users.
We're not interested in the users in the sense of arrest. We're interested in drug dealers who fully understand coming up here to Maine is to make a profit.
U.S. Attorney Tom Delahanty says the three working groups will hold public meetings over the next several months, and they will occasionally meet together. The effort is also expected to include a statewide summit sometime next year to report on outcomes. He says ever since the two drug summits in August, people from across the state have been coming forward and asking what they can do to help.
In 45 years of practicing law, mostly in some way related to criminal practice in the courts, I've never seen this large number of individuals come forward regardless of the issue.
Some will serve on the committees. Some will be asked to participate in other ways. We're not going to cure addiction, Delahanty said, but we're not going to stand around while these people poison our neighbors and friends. For MPBN News, I'm Susan Sharon.
You're listening to Maine Things Considered on Maine Public Radio. Still to come, a look back at the Works Progress Administration with New England filmmaker Michael McGlaris. But first, you may be spending more time than you'd expected in the voting booth next year. That's because 2016 could turn out to be one of the busiest ballots ever if two new gambling questions are approved by the Secretary of State's office. Two separate efforts are underway to begin the signature gathering process to establish a casino in York County and a racino or slot machine parlor and harness racing track somewhere in southern Maine. As A.J. Higgins reports, both efforts are designed to compete with a developing gaming industry in Massachusetts.
Lewiston signature gathering organizer Stavros Mendros isn't saying much about the casino effort, but he did confirm that he was approached by a group that wants to launch a citizens' initiative to establish a casino in York County.
You know, I own the largest petition company in the state, and they reached out to me and asked me to file the paperwork for them so they could get the ball rolling. So that's all I've done right now. I really can't. I don't know much more than that at this point, and I really can't say much more than that.
Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap says he has begun the process of reviewing the applications for Mendros' effort, as well as another for a racino slot machine parlor that would be operated by Scarborough Downs owner Sharon Terry.
We did get two applications yesterday for a casino in York County and an integrated racino in southern Maine. Two different organizations have submitted these, and what happens now is that we convey their draft legislation to the Office of the Reviser of Statutes.
According to the York County petition, the new casino would enhance tourism in southern Maine and prevent the state from losing gaming revenues to Massachusetts, where several new casinos are currently under consideration. The Scarborough Downs proposal cites similar reasons for expanding gambling, but envisions a facility that would include a harness racing track as part of the complex. Dunlap says the two applications bring the current number of ballot proposals for 2016 to 13, but both efforts will have to obtain just over 61,000 signatures to qualify for the ballot by February 1st.
I'm not real hopeful that we're going to see gambling initiatives on the 2016 ballot, just because there's a lot of work that has to be done before we get that far.
Last year, a report commissioned by the legislature determined there was capacity for additional casino gambling in Maine and recommended the southern region of the state as the best location for a new gaming facility. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
And finally today, boosting the creative economy might sound like an unusual way to help lift a country out of recession, but that was exactly what President Franklin Roosevelt tried to do 80 years ago. As part of the Works Progress Administration, the huge stimulus package that formed the backbone of the New Deal, thousands of artists were paid to make music, write plays, and produce sculptures and paintings. New England documentary filmmaker Michael McGlaris tackles the subject in his latest film, which premieres tonight in Portland. Tom Porter has more.
Nobody wants you when you're down and out. Nobody needs you without.
At the height of the Great Depression in 1933, more than 12 million Americans were out of work. The unemployment rate was more than 25%. As concerns grew that the U.S. might be heading towards a revolution, President Roosevelt's priority was to put Americans back to work, including artists. As part of the New Deal, nearly $30 million went into the pockets of visual artists, actors, writers, and musicians like blues singer Juanita Hall, heard here singing one of the anthems of the Depression.
Nobody wants you when you're down and out. Nobody wants you when you're down and out.
Michael McGlaris' latest film, Enough to Live On, examines this bold initiative by the Roosevelt administration. The title is a quote from one of the artists employed by the federal government, William de Kooning, who went on to become a world-renowned expressionist painter. But in Depression-era America, Kooning's circumstances were modest, and McGlaris says the artist was grateful for the opportunity to be paid a plumber's wage to create his work.
William de Kooning, in fact, was painting houses when he took advantage of the federal art project funding. And he in fact, is the derivation of the quotation, enough to live on. He literally said, the WPA gave me enough to live on.
McGlaris says de Kooning was one of a number of future artistic legends kept in work by the WPA during the 1930s.
And it's doubtful that their work would have prospered as much as it did, Tom, eventually, without this public funding that sustained them in their 20s and 30s. I mean, Jackson Pollock was painting neckties when he was pulled into the WPA ranks. He was doing that for a living.
They'd be worth a few dollars now,
wouldn't you think? Yeah.
More than 7,000 artists were put to work creating more than 25,000 works of art, giant murals, paintings, sculptures, prints, many of which can still be seen today. McLaris says there was pushback from some in Congress to the idea of injecting all this money into a sector where the returns were largely intangible. Wouldn't we be better off giving these people a pick and shovel and putting them to work in the labor force, they said? The response of the Roosevelt administration, says McLaris, was that these people will be more effective going back to work doing what they know how to do.
So imagine, for example, putting writers back to work so that they can write the 50-state guide to America, which is the Federal Writers Project. Imagine putting painters back to work so that you can walk in to more than 5,000 post offices in the United States, including here in Maine, and see works of art. So there was a real belief that if we all collaborate in that effort, we pull ourselves out of the depression and we make our society stronger.
Is it possible to quantify or address to what extent this project did help bring America out of depression? I mean, how can someone making a painting help restart the economy? It's not like building a factory, is it?
No, excellent question. And like all arts considerations, there's a soft answer I'm going to give you, and it's not a very good one, which is that we are all enhanced as individual citizens. Our lives are enhanced. And the collective body of who we are as American citizens in our culture is enhanced when the arts flourish. I can't quantify that value, but I know it's true.
And then there's the so-called hard answer, says McLaris, which focuses on the practical importance of keeping America's artists busy.
What we did was we prevented anarchy. And Franklin Roosevelt realized something very important, as many writers did at the time. We came perilously close to losing our democracy.
Those creative people could be very troublesome if not kept employed.
As Erica Doss, Professor Doss, says in this film, you want those people off the streets. You want them doing something with their minds and their talents. And FDR was no fool. He wanted them off the streets, too, and he wanted them gainfully employed.
Enough to Live On, the Arts of the WPA, was made in Maine and will premiere here tonight at USM's Portland campus at 7 p.m. You can hear more from that interview with filmmaker Michael McLaris at news.mpbn.net, where you can also see some examples of New Deal artwork. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
Nobody wants you when you're down.
And at 13 minutes before 6 o'clock, it's time to check the weather forecast with our meteorologist, Paul Cousins.
I am encouraged by the prospects of favorable holiday weekend weather as well as festive foliage foraging, and we shall dispense with wet weather during the next 24 hours. Clouds thickening tonight, low 30s north, low 40s south, a bit milder along the immediate coast. Low pressure will arc right through Maine tomorrow, rain spreading east of the morning, the heaviest a swath from Rangeley to St. Stephens. Temperatures in the upper 40s north to mid-60s south of Portland. Much drier thereafter. Saturday, partly sunny to partly cloudy north and west, windy. Mostly sunny and breezy in the morning for the remainder of the state. Chilly north mid-40s to upper 50s south. Sunday, skies overcast north with isolated sprinkles caribou to the Quebec border. Filtered sunshine south. Low 50s north, mid-60s south. The holiday toasty. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to Ed Moore and Andrew Catalina and Barbara Caritti. If you missed part of the show or you'd like to catch up with all of today's Maine news, check out our new podcast, This Day in Maine. It's all today's news on demand to stream or download at mpbn.net. It should be up by 7 o'clock tonight. Enjoy it. It's great. I'm Nora Flaherty.